Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Robert Yeager and the Tau Foundation.
This show is an encore presentation of the Faith Middleton Fuchsmoos. Hope you enjoy this second helping.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
Ooh. It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Fuchsmoos, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. We're going to talk with you about our stuffed burger ideas. We have lots of them. We want to talk about special hot dogs and what to do with those hot dog rolls that make your hot dog sensational. Shrimp rolls, we want to tell you about what appetizers would be fun, what to drink. Rosé goes with everything. My BLT potato salad, a burger, a stuffed burger I made up. I can't wait to tell you about it. Okay, my treasured food buddies are here. Senior contributor Chris Brosberry and our senior producer, Robin Doyon Aiken. Hey, everybody.
Happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th of July. It's time for the shopping and the getting.
And the fireworks.
I know that is my favorite thing. Oh. Although I keep promising I'm going to go to Canada. We think that Boston is the most spectacular. Mm-hmm. In Canada, they have a kind of Olympics of fireworks. It's a world competition.
Oh,
people
wow.
come from all over the world to compete. And these are fireworks like you have never seen in your life, I'm
I
told.
Had no idea.
So we have to all do that someday. Fuchsmoos road trip, another one. Okay. Can we get right to the stuffed burgers? Because these are so much fun. Chris, what's your idea for this 4th of July?
You know, there's so many. I'm a straight up caramelize some onions.
I like this
first,
already.
Yeah, I caramelize some onions first, and then I take some bacon and I crisp it up, and then I fold that into my hamburger meat with a little bit of Worcestershire sauce, and that's my stuffed burger.
Just tell me your technique for getting it into the burger. So when you say I fold it into my burger,
logistics.
All right. So yes, one of the methods, and I don't do this with this burger, but I do this with other things, is you take your hamburger and put it on a cutting board or a piece of plastic on top of a cutting board and really make it nice and thin. So press it till it's about a half an inch.
It's sitting on a piece of plastic.
Yeah, but make it twice the size as you would a regular burger, about a half an inch. And then you take your filling and you put it in one big clump in the middle of that and you fold it over. So it literally is stuffed in the middle. That's one way.
So it looks like a taco shell?
Yeah, so it looks like, but you can then make it into a nice round hamburger, but it's filled in the middle. With my hamburger and caramelized onion, I like to mix it all in. Does that make sense? So it's not like a pocket in the middle. It's actually mixed throughout the hamburger.
Oh, meatloaf style.
So meatloaf style.
Oh, I like that.
So, but either way, you can do it.
Okay, so that comes to a burger that I want to try, and I'm just going to make it up on the spot. Ground turkey.
Ooh.
And then chorizo.
Okay.
And mix those two together.
Oh, yeah.
So because ground turkey needs a lot of help.
Yeah.
So that's good right there. Then I'm going to toast fennel seeds.
Nice.
And I'm going to sprinkle those into the meat also.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm going to roast some fennel with a little olive oil, then chop it up. And mix that meatloaf style into the meat,
nice.
Too.
That sounds so good.
Because that turkey can dry out.
Yeah, but the chorizo will
but
keep
with
it right
chorizo
on.
A little bit. So I'm going to mix it all together like that and then on the bun. So it's going to be a turkey chorizo fennel burger.
I like that one.
Yep. And with the toasted seeds in there, you're going to get a little bit of crunch inside.
Yeah.
I had been thinking maybe I'll just toast the seeds and then coat the outside of the burger with the fennel seeds, but I'm a little afraid of on the grill.
Yeah, I like
they might burn.
It in.
Okay. I'm just, making it up. And that's the thing about stuffed burgers that you can do. All right, Robin, what's your favorite?
I love the classic gorgonzola stuffed burger.
Nice.
It's you think of it as something that you would get in the restaurant, but this is one that you can actually make at home. Not intimidating at all.
And do you mix it in with the meat, or do you do that thing where you make the burger the way Chris said, put the gorgonzola in the center?
I like to put it in the center because I love that surprise bite. You get a little bit as you're making your way around the burger. So that's my good.
So, mm-hmm. so I got a method, and I'm not a big fan, but I do own one of these. It's called a burger press. Have you ever seen it? It's a little plastic round disc, and it's to make a formed burger. But to make what is called the perfect stuffed burger, you start with that bottom part that's the hollowed out, you know, the cup-looking thing, and you take about three-quarters, maybe a little bit less of your hamburger meat that you're going to put in one hamburger, and you press it in the bottom and around the sides like you're making a pie.
Uh-huh.
With your hamburger. Okay. Then you would take a nice – your gorgonzola, your crumbled gorgonzola, and you would line it right down the middle. So you'd have this layer of gorgonzola, and then you could do something else too or just do gorgonzola. And then you take the last quarter or third of your hamburger and put it on top, and then you do a little press with the top. Then it's not like a pocket as it is just a full layer of gorgonzola in the middle. It's the reason I bought the burger press. And then think about it. You could take slices of bacon.
Well, I decided my burger needs some of those caramelized onions you were talking about earlier.
Oh, wouldn't that be good with your gorgonzola?
Mm-hmm. Oh. That needs to be on top. That's what makes it a kind of restaurant-style burger.
Yeah.
For people who are trying to get more vegetables into their meals or use a little bit less meat, we see so many companies now coming out with their Superior Burger in New York City and lots of others where they have worked, scientists are working on creating a burger that is either half meat or no meat, but actually bleeds the way a burger does when you chew. They're using beet juice to create that texture. Still not quite right, but they're working on it. I'm just thinking now, this calls for improvisation. What could we do if you want to use half the meat and get more vegetables in and maybe not even mention it to anybody? What would you do?
Well, mushrooms for sure, right? Because they're the meatiest vegetable growing.
Good idea. Very good idea.
Yeah. I am totally into the 50-50 burger. And that's 50% burger meat and 50% vegetables.
What vegetables would come to mind and how are you treating
them? So I treat my vegetables just like I treat my beef. I grind it. But if you don't have a grinder, let's just pick some vegetables that I think would go together. Let's do red pepper, onion, and some mushrooms. Take those ingredients and I would put them in the grinder and grind it with the meat.
The food processor?
Or if you don't have a grinder, use a food processor. So you have your hamburger already ground. So if you bought store-bought ground beef, right, take 50% of that and then you take 50% of vegetables that you put in the food processor and just chop up until it's nice and fine and then you just fold it together.
They're not cooked. You just leave them uncooked.
Mm-hmm. Yes, raw vegetables. I've done carrots. I've done celery. I've done zucchini. I've done beets. It doesn't even matter, especially if you have a little hand grinder or a grinder you can attach to your KitchenAid. Then you can just send your vegetables right through the grinder, right into the bowl with the ground beef and mix it right in. It's a great way to sneak your vegetables in if you have kids. And it's a great way to eat a really, really good burger. If you want to eat a big burger, but you're watching your weight or you don't want that much fat, you don't go to a 95% meat and 5% fat burger because those are really dry. Mm-hmm. You just get regular ground beef and you mix it 50% with vegetables and it's win-win.
How about chickpeas? I mean, it's not a vegetable, but
black beans, chickpeas, grind or put in the food processor, just about anything you can think of.
Yeah, you're on your way to a vegetarian burger. Remember on the show years ago, we had a competition here and we all tried making vegetarian burgers to see if we could come up with a texture that was pleasing. And we used lots of techniques. We used nuts because it gave you that feeling of chew. We used every kind of vegetable imaginable. I used an Indian masala sauce to flavor the chickpeas. It was really fun. That was fun.
And that's how I got to this. I got to this because every time I eat a good veggie burger, I keep thinking, you know what would make this a little better? Some ground beef.
But what is it you're looking for with that ground beef?
It's the flavor.
Yeah.
It's not the chew because we've created – and especially yours because I remember yours had everything texturally that a hamburger has. It's just missing the meat.
It makes it that burger essence.
Yes, that taste. Like, and you don't need a lot of meat.
Remember the guy who was on the show who was talking about chili with us?
Yeah, Rob Walsh.
Rob Walsh. Sure. And he said that little trick where he said if you're making a vegetarian chili and you put something yeasty in it, it tastes exactly like it has meat. Was he talking about Marmite, the jars of Marmite?
Yep.
So you put a little bit of some kind of yeast that's in a jar and into the meat or the vegetarian stew, and it somehow mimics the taste of beef. So anyway, we'll see. So we're celebrating the 4th of July here on the show. I'm with Robin Doyon Akin, Chris Prosperi. How about drinks for the 4th of July? If you drink alcohol, I just really think that a very chilled rosé goes with everything. If it's hamburgers, hot dogs, potato salad, shrimp roll, I'm going to talk about in just a second. It just goes with everything.
Agreed.
Deviled eggs.
And it's festive.
It's festive. But you know what?
Pretty in the glass.
But you know what I go to on the 4th of July? Is cold beer.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
But you know what? There's so many now. Recently, I walked into a little bar kind of restaurant in Torrington, Connecticut, and I had happened into what they did was a tap takeover. And I was just blown out of the water. There were 6 or 7 different Connecticut breweries. They took over all their taps. And you got to sample all this Connecticut beer. And I'm like, and I ended up going to the package store a couple days later and picking up some of them.
Yeah, it's really, really
– we're made Connecticut beer.
Made such progress. Let's switch over to hot dogs. I'm really careful about hot dogs because that is where the mad cow stuff can really get involved. And so I try to pay really close attention about how hot dogs are made. Chris, your favorites, we've talked about this in the past.
So many.
I mean where you trust how they're made.
Yes, in Connecticut. So if you're going to worry about hot dogs and the stuff that's in it, do what we do with a lot of our food is buy from a local guy, from a local company. And we have some of the best hot dogs, I think, in the country here in Connecticut. Right here in New Haven, we have Hummel. And they make probably my favorite hot dog on earth, which is their Big Red Hot, which is a spicy hot dog. Oh, my God. You have to cut it in half. It could be for 2 people. Anyway, that's a great
and
hot dog.
And those are fun.
Hummel makes a regular one, too.
Yeah, they make the skinless, all natural, whatever. They have great hot dogs. And then in Hartford, we have Muckies. And Muckies, oh, my God, those are my favorite grilling hot dog. Oh, they're
flavor or snap?
Snap. Oh, my God. They're the best on the grill. And then we have Groton Weagle, which is in Bloomfield, which we almost lost. That was saved. And now, oh, my God, I love their hot dogs.
I love hot dogs.
So, yeah.
When I think about local food, I do not think about hot dogs. So I'm so glad that you're telling me
that. Oh, my God.
I have no idea.
And then you have these Polish places in New Britain that make kielbasa. They're branching out and making hot dogs.
So really
we literally have some of the best hot dogs on the planet here in Connecticut.
So here's my thing about the hot dogs. I promise you, you will win 5 stars doing one thing in advance. And here's what it is. Get the flat-sided rolls. And if you can only find the round side ones, cut them so that there's some part that's flat. But here's the trick. If you put them on the grill, you can't control them. You want to take the butter out ahead of time so the butter gets soft and it's room temperature. Before the guests arrive, I butter each side of the flat-sided roll.
Yeah.
We haven't even started.
That's the New England style roll.
We haven't even started cooking yet. And I do this for any kind of hot dog roll, shrimp, no matter lobster, whatever it's in. So butter both sides of it, put it into a sauté pan.
Oh, so you make like a grilled cheese kind of way out of it, right?
No, I just brown both sides in the frying pan where I can control it. It doesn't matter if in the end they're room temperature.
Yeah, no.
Then I put them on a tray. I bring them outside. I start cooking the hot dogs. And then I slip them into each one of these rolls. Well, the hot dog itself is hot. So, you know, no one's going, oh, my God, it's a cold roll.
Oh,
all they taste is that butter. Oh,
the toasty.
That buttery toasty outside that is still crunchy. That's the secret to just killer hot dogs.
I am the hot dog king. It is my favorite, literally my favorite food in the world. And when I do hot dogs at home, like 4th of July kind of thing, I do a hot dog bar. So I'll get 2 or 3 different kinds of hot dogs, all local hot dogs. So you can try. And like I said, the Red Hot is one of them I have to get. And then I get one of the Muckies and one of the Groton Weagles. And then I grill them all. I'm going to do from now on what you do with the rolls, because I usually try to get them on the grill and the smoke and the fire and the butter's on. So I'm going to do that. But then I do a toppings bar. So I do some sauerkraut that I've heated up in the kitchen. I do a meat sauce, which is just ground beef with some tomatoes and spices. And then I do a relish.
Cloves.
Oh, yeah. I do a couple different kinds of mustard, some ketchup. And then I have a raw onion and jalapenos. And I put all that stuff out.
I love this as an idea.
And then people just hops their own hot dog and makes their own. And it's like going to a hot dog shack.
I love that idea. Speaking of hot dog shacks, I happen to live about 1 minute away from Blackie's Hot Dogs.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Which they are always on the list of the best hot dogs in the country. So one of my favorite things to do is go to Blackie's, get a box of, like, you order just 10 hot dogs. They put them in a box with some bags of chips, and we head over to the park. So Blackie's in Cheshire, right near the highway.
It is a hot dog destination. They are.
And so, really simple. I mean, they're not fancy or anything. They're just the ultimate hot dog.
You know what? It's both hot dog and then some kind of seasoned grill. For instance, if I have a choice of how to do a hot dog, it really isn't on the grill outside. It's splitting it down the middle and pan frying it so that the butter caramelizes the inside as well as the outside. That's my idea of a
hot dog. That's the best hot dog. It's done on a flat top. On a big flat top, they grill the hot dog on it, and then the buttered bun goes right next to it, and the onions go right next to it.
I need a big, giant thing.
Let's
in
go.
My house like that.
Blackie's, here we come.
Well, we just get a grill like that for indoors. That's what I need. All right, so we're going to take a short break right here, and then keep talking with you about 4th of July possibilities. Of course, you could use these ideas for any weeknight or weekend. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. We're online now at foodschmooze.org. Where's your favorite hot dog place? We'll be right back.
And when it's time, you know, you just gotta ignite the light and live.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, "Now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
Hey, do you want us to send the show to you so you can listen anytime you want? Really, it's called a podcast, technically, but that's really what it is. And if you would like that, just go to our site, foodschmooze.org, and you'll see podcast sign up. Mm-hmm. And you just put in, you know, where you want it sent. And that's it. It just comes to you. And that's really how most people listen now, kind of on demand. So happy to do it. I am with my treasured food buddy for this segment, and that is wine broker Mark Raymond, who lives in Wethersfield, Connecticut. And he's got a wine that we've talked about on the show before, but we think is so perfect for this 4th of July celebration, and really throughout the entire summer and winter, by the way, because we're drinking rosé now. This is a dry rosé, pink in the glass. This is the bargain of the century, and it is one of the best rosés I've ever had, and it's
$10. $10. It's a great deal.
Tell me.
So the name of the wine is Finca El Origen, and it's Rosé of Malbec. It's the 2016 vintage, fresh.
Rosé of Malbec means Malbec grapes.
Malbec grapes, yep, that they first press, and then they get very little skin contact, so you just get a little bit of that color from the red grape. It bleeds into it, but it's light pink.
In the glass, it is so
gorgeous looking. You know, we love wines and we try millions of wines.
So absolutely.
We like every kind of wine. It doesn't have to be fancy or fussy. But because we try so many, when we all look at each other, stop talking and say, oh my God, are you kidding me? $10 and this is one of the best rosés I've ever had.
And I love for this time of year when everybody's out there grilling and, you know, you don't want that heavy red, but you want something that has some weight to it. And that's what this rosé of Malbec
richness.
Has. It has some richness and it can stand up to beef and
hot
pork and lamb on the grill and hamburgers.
Grilled food.
Yeah,
absolutely. Grilled chicken. Oh, and
all
this
that good
thing
stuff.
I'm going to talk about. This
exactly.
This, you know, shrimp roll.
Right, right.
It would be great with that. So we've got that wine and a picture of it posted at our site, Finca El Origen, as we would say here. And it's honestly around $10 a bottle.
$10 a bottle.
And we give you the information to say at your wine store, or you can shoot them over the picture, or you could see lots of times the Fuchsmuth shelf talkers are up in all the stores.
Absolutely.
And you see, oh, there is that wine. Anyway, Mark, I want to talk to you because at this time of year, for this holiday especially, people go to tradition.
Oh, yeah.
And Robin, I don't know what your tradition is at your house with the kids and with Steve. You've got a very special oven. I want to talk with you about that and Robin with your tradition. But I wanted to just give an idea for a food, a choice. If you're not doing hamburgers and hot dogs and all that, and you don't want to do the lobster roll, which can be very expensive, or you just say, oh, I always do that. I'd rather go to a place and have it there.
Right.
It is so easy to make a roll that I make at my house all the time. A corn, shrimp, and bacon roll. On occasion, I add chunks
good.
Of
that
avocado. Again, the New England flat-sided roll.
Mm-hmm.
Butter it. This is ahead of making the roll. Butter
right.
it. Toast the sides in a pan.
Yeah.
And then set all those rolls aside. I don't do it on the grill because sometimes it gets a little burned. And
right.
So you can control it in the pan and melt the butter in the pan and then flip both sides, those golden brown buttery.
Right.
Set those rolls aside. And then I prepare this salad of, I'd fried up some bacon.
Always
just
good.
Crispy. And then some corn off the cob, you know, slice it off the cob.
Fresh corn on the cob.
Yep. And then sometimes I'll mix it with a little bit of yogurt and a touch of mayonnaise. People don't want it to be too rich or they can't have it, mayonnaise.
Right.
Other times I will mix it with regular mayonnaise, salt and pepper, a little bit of toss in some chunked avocado, the corn, the shrimp, and sprinkle it with bacon or toss it in.
Red onion?
Red onion. Or sometimes on the top at the very end before serving, just dice up some chives and sprinkle it right across the top. That corn, shrimp, bacon, maybe avocado roll is... it's a delicious thing.
That sounds awesome.
It's a delicious
thing. That rosé would be perfect with it.
It would
be absolutely perfect.
What is it about the rosé that goes with everything?
It's a very versatile
Even
wine.
Even the steak. It cuts the fat in the steak.
Yeah, it's got acidity. It's got flavor.
Yeah.
And it hangs on the palate. It just kind of sits out there and just, it refreshes you too because you chill it down.
So, Robin, what's your tradition at your house? Is there one thing you do on 4th of July weekend? You know, if we don't do the chowder, everybody's going to be mad.
We always smoke something. And then
Ooh.
We also grill. So we'll smoke ribs usually with Steve makes an awesome barbecue sauce with plum.
And
it's got some heat to it, actually,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
So we'll do like a plum barbecue sauce and then like a traditional really.
You have a smoker?
We do. We have a little smoker. And
it's the best.
I know.
Was it hard to learn to do? I've never smoked anything.
Well, there is a little bit of a learning curve. I can't say that the first few times we used it, you know, we would time things and say like, oh, this is going to be ready in like 8 hours. It's going to smoke for 8 hours. And then, you know, there were some times at like 10:30 at night, Steve was still going out to the smoker and being frustrated because it wasn't ready yet. Or, you know, you have to keep the temperature at a certain level.
Oh, that's the
level.
Toughest part. Yeah.
Yeah. So
the temperature.
Once you do it a few times, like give yourself a whole summer to to learn how to do this right. And yeah. then that next summer, it's just all good,
goody. You're a smoking queen. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds good.
Take it right into the fall and the winter, too.
Now I want ribs. Now it's in my mind. Okay. I just have to say the word ribs to me, and I think, oh, that's one of the best things.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Now, to go to your tradition, Mark Raymond, Mark has a wood fire oven that he's built into his man cave. In the it's a gorgeous man cave, by the way. Go ahead. Tell me what this is.
All right, so the traditional Argentine barbecue is a wood-fired grill. They call it a parrilla. It's an open pit with, you know, a chimney and then a grate that actually is on a crank. So it lowers. The grate can go down really low to the coals or start up really high.
Did you buy the whole unit?
The metal parts I brought back from Argentina. But you can get those online now if you look up parrillas. And I think there's
How do you spell that?
P-A-R-R-I-L-L-A. Parrilla.
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 Okay.
So you've got this this open pit. You start by making the coals, and you never cook over the flames. You let the wood burn down.
So this is wood charcoal?
Wood.
Or
you could use wood, or you can use wood charcoal, whichever you
what
prefer.
What do you use?
I use actual hardwood. I use maple, oak. Sometimes I use a little ash. Sometimes I get lucky and get some apple wood or cherry wood.
So you just start a fire.
I start a big like campfire in this pit, and the grate's really high up. And then I let everything cook down, and I push the fire over to the back corner, and then I scoop out little by little, like scoop out coals, and I put it onto one side of the grill.
You have a device that kind of scrapes
it
forward?
A little shovel.
Yeah.
That I'll pull the coals out, and I'll lay it into an area where I lower the grill down. And then I start at one level, and as the meat progresses and cooks, I start lowering, 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 and get it farther down by the fire. And so our typical Argentine barbecue, which we'll do on the 4th of July, will consist of sausage, blood sausage, sweetbreads. Sometimes, if we're lucky, we have a little entraña, which is the skirt steak, and then we do beef short ribs. You know, a little bit of all of that, depending on how many people you have. Mm. And the wood flavor, cooking, you know, meats over a wood fire.
What is it?
You get the smoky flavors that you would get sort of like from a smoker, but then you also just get this wonderful cooking texture to the outside, a little crispiness, and then we always like things a little on the juicy side. I prefer my meats cooked medium, but if you cook things well done here and you do it slowly and over time, which is what they do in Argentina, they love to cook everything well done. But that's the only place I've ever eaten well-done meat where I actually enjoy it because it's juicy. Mm-hmm. Here, when we cook well done, it's like shoe leather.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are people that can do it here, but it's really interesting. I think it has to do with the marbling of the meat down there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's something about a steak cooked over a wood fire that
so
is
delicious.
Unbeatable. I mean, charcoal is a wonderful thing.
Sure.
But really over wood is, if you haven't tried this, there are restaurants that specialize in this. I would say encourage you to try it at a restaurant, and then you can decide if you want to do it at home. You certainly can make a wood fire in a Weber grill.
Absolutely.
You know, so you don't have to have this amazing thing that Mark has at his house. My brother-in-law, Bruce, I had a ranch in Colorado, and he had this old school, you know, with a crank.
Thing.
And he would do his steaks, and everybody in town practically would come because Bruce was going to do steaks. He would walk all over the property and gather up cottonwood branches.
Ooh.
And apparently there is something about cottonwood as a fuel for a wood fuel for steaks you're doing that is astonishing. I had these steaks and they were like fall to your knees delicious.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you can now in this world we're in order
cottonwood.
Kinds of woods online. And so if anybody wants cottonwood
branches. I'm
going to
have to look that up, yeah.
What about grapevines? Don't people sometimes tell me how that works?
The vineyard they take in the early spring, I think it is, they go through and they cut everything back. And instead of throwing it away, now you see they're cutting it up and they're using it for fires, using it for fuel, and then now cooking with them, cooking with grapevines, which is kind of cool. Yeah,
that is really cool.
I haven't experienced it, but I've seen it on video. I definitely want to try that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I forgot to tell all of you that I wanted to do a fire pit, and that can be an expensive venture. And I thought, wait a minute, I don't even know if the fire pit's going to be my thing.
Right.
So I want to try it. I thought, what could I do? I bought a Weber.
There you go.
Kind of a decent size one. Took the legs right off. Set it on a pad of bricks.
Yeah.
Put bricks all around it. And threw wood into it. Put chairs all around in a circle. And there you go. I have an instant fire pit.
There you go.
You hacked one.
I hacked one, yeah. And you know how the ash comes out the bottom and everything? It's perfect.
Nice.
Yeah. It was like $99.
I love it.
A few bucks for the bricks.
Yeah. Bricks are cheap. Come on.
Yeah.
That is hysterical.
So on a cool night, we're all set. Or on a real mosquito-y night, you know.
Yeah.
It's just pretty to look at. It's about like 4,000 degrees, not exactly what you want to do. But if you want one for when it starts to get cooler.
I love it.
It's a great way to try to see if you like it.
Cool idea.
So what's your dessert, go-to dessert for 4th of July?
Well, my wife makes an amazing flan. Break out the dulce de leche and whipped cream and put it right on top of there. And, it's perfect.
What's the secret to her flan?
She puts it in the double boiler.
That sounded just like Jiminy Glick. What's the secret to her flan?
I watch her a lot, but I never got it. No, she she puts it in the double boiler. She uses eggs. Sometimes she'll put cream cheese into it, and that just makes it a little bit more fluffy.
Wow.
Good stuff.
A lot of French chefs are discovering that.
Yeah.
No, they are.
Asking
people to bring over suitcases of it so they can use it. Yeah, there's no cream cheese in France.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
they bring the Philadelphia, they call it.
Philadelphia. That's what they call it in Argentina. They call it Philadelphia.
It's a delicacy.
That's cream cheese. Yeah, but it's Philadelphia. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. One of my favorite things on 4th of July is potato salad. And I just love to do a BLT potato salad.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Where I use iceberg lettuce and chop it up because it's got a real body to it and crunch to it.
Right, right.
Do the regular potatoes with a regular mayonnaise, salt and pepper. And then I throw in tons and tons of crumbled up crisp bacon that I've, made.
We love bacon.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have to make at least and then cherry tomatoes cut in half.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
So it's a real BLT potato salad. And then you could do red potatoes or whatever potatoes you normally like in your potato salad. And so you take bites of the, what's coming up in the fork is a piece of potato and the salt and pepper, mayonnaise, and a little bit of cherry tomato and a lot of bacon. And if you want, you can put in some red onion. Because you know how potato salad needs a little bit of red onion?
Yeah. I put red onion on my BLT.
So have some fun.
Yeah.
You do?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Oh, wow.
I've never done red onion on everything.
Mary doesn't love it, but.
No.
She doesn't love putting the onions on a BLT, but.
No.
Well, don't forget, too, at my house, to get back to the dessert idea just for a second, on 4th of July, you have to have s'mores.
My kids,
that's what they look forward to. They don't even care so much about the ribs. They're just eating it to get to the s'mores.
Yeah, get me to the s'mores.
Where's your fire?
We set up a little fire pit in the backyard. Yep.
You could grill.
Sit there.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as the sun goes down, the fire goes up.
You know, you could use a hibachi.
Absolutely.
Make a little wood fire pit.
It's one of my all-time favorites, the hibachi.
The hibachi is the best. You put it
in the back of the car.
Take
it to the beach.
To the beach.
Yeah.
Remember the little parking places that you would have?
Oh, yeah.
That you would pull off on the side of the road on the way to the beach?
Yeah. I had a hibachi in my car forever.
It's totally.
And the
functional.
Funny thing was, you'd have to sit there and you'd have to wait for it to cool down before you could actually drive away.
Oh, I know.
So the conversations, you'd play hide and seek with your brothers and sisters.
People come wandering over.
Oh, yeah.
When you're on the beach. What are you doing? We're making a fish. Here's some wine. We have more 4th of July celebration coming your way here on the Food Schmooze. We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers. And for on-demand podcast delivery of this show every week, go to foodschmooze.org. And we'll be right back. This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the East End of Long Island, and the Hamptons, of course. The senior producer is Robin Doyon-Aiken. And to hear this show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Podcasts and our curated recommendations are always online at foodschmooze.org. Talk with us on Facebook, too. Search Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. All right, my buddies are here, as you know, Alex Provence, Chris Prosperi, Mark Raymond, and Robin Doyon-Aiken. We're going kind of crazy on 4th of July stuff. Of course, all the weekends around that count, too. We did a rosé earlier. Can we get into the other $10 winner, Carolina Chardonnay?
Yeah, the Santa Carolina Chardonnay. It's wonderful. Apple and pear notes to it. It's crisp. It's refreshing. It does have a little touch of oak. So it does have that little sort of smokiness on the finish and in the nose.
Good for grilling.
It's wonderful with, we talk about lobster rolls and things that have butter and grilling to them. I think it's a great pairing. It's really refreshing, too.
For $10, my gosh.
Yeah.
And it can happen that you've got a $10 bottle of wine or under. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, it will be junk wine. What they've done at the vineyard to add to the wine is a junk. It's not healthy. We shouldn't have it in our bodies. Mm-hmm. But for some of these places that make wine in other countries, I mean, I'm not saying every American producer does that. That's not the case.
No.
But you do have to think about it. And so a good rule of thumb is when it's really low price, I start looking outside the country because they have rules that you can't do this.
And the land in Chile is so perfect for growing grapes, but so inexpensive. Instead of being like, you know, $1 zillion for an acre of Napa land, you know, Chile is beautiful, pristine land, and it's affordable. So these wineries from around the world are going there. They use state-of-the-art technology and producing really clean, wholesome wine that's delicious.
Delicious to drink, yeah. Absolutely. Great value.
And it's hand-harvested.
Hand-harvested, still family-owned winery.
The one thing I will say about this wine, this is a good wine to pair with many things. It has a kind of broad profile to it. You heard Mark talk about a little bit of oak, a nice acidity, and yet a little touch of butter. Sometimes these Chardonnays are in one direction or the other. And so they go with a particular thing, the lobster roll, an actual lobster, because it matches the butter. This one has a broad personality.
More versatile. And
it's approachable.
So you could just stand around and drink it because it's a lovely thing to do.
And you make an interesting point. Sometimes you can taste a wine and it just seems out of balance. It's either too much fruit, too much acidity.
It becomes an acquired taste for people.
This is a wine that just has great balance all the way through.
Yeah.
It's just got a little bit of touch of everything.
When you're doing a party, you have to get wines that everybody's going to like. It's fun to have special wines for special friends, but when you're doing a big group of people, you're in plastic cups, you're outside, people are talking, you know, they're drinking. It's not the time for something super special that, because you're going to leave and you're going to find the cups half full later around.
Oh, that's so sad. You need a broad appeal wine.
You need group-friendly wines, for sure.
No, I think that's the hardest thing sometimes, to find something that everyone will like. Right?
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's
neutral and nice. Yeah.
So not too expensive.
If you go to our website, you will see this wine. You'll see the label, our remarks about the wine, a picture of the label. You could call up the wine store and make sure it's on the shelf. And if it's not, they'll go to the distributor, look it up in the book, and they should have it to you within 24 hours, Mark. Very good. Can we do one more wine thing? So many years ago when we first started the Food Schmooze, a man called in and he said, I have a wonderful tradition that comes from my family. And he was Portuguese. Okay. And he said, we pour a bottle of cava, Spanish sparkling wine, and it's not expensive anyway.
Ain't good, though. Cava's a great.
Delicious.
Yeah,
love cava.
Intense bubbles, beautiful sparkling wine. And he said, you just fill this big stainless steel bowl up with your favorite fruits. You just chop it all up.
Like strawberries.
Put it in there. Blueberries, strawberries. Mm. Put it all in, and then you pour in a bottle of this sparkling cava. And then he said, you put a plastic wrap over the top of the bowl and stick it in the refrigerator. It stays in there overnight. Mm. Now the fruit is macerating. It is, you know, absorbing the alcohol, almost cooking in a way and getting that beautiful texture. Then the next day for your party, you pull it out. He said you can serve it with a ladle as bowls of soup that are a little wonderful because they've got that kava. And the fruit is just luscious, or you could scoop it over ice cream or cake.
So refreshing. Yeah.
It's a tradition in Galicia, well, throughout the north coast of Spain. So if you took that cava and then you blended it with a little lemon sorbet and a dash of cream, you'd make like this cava milkshake. And at the end of dinners, that's tradition. So you have this like flute with this creamy cava milkshake.
That's your dessert.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's
that's
you cool. know, it's refreshing when you're like full. There's always room for kava.
Exactly. In Argentina, what they'll do is they'll make a thing called clerico, and it's basically a white sangria. So they'll take that fruit salad that's been marinating overnight.
Fruit salad, that's good.
And they'll put a little bit into a glass and then fill it up with more sparkling wine.
So it
brightens it up a little bit more, and you've got a drink with some wonderful pieces of fruit in there.
Wow, that's sangria.
Yeah.
I would add fresh fruit on the second round. So strain out that fruit and use it for something, and then put the fresh cava in with fresh pretty fruit, less macerated.
Why would you not want the fruit that's been poaching overnight in the cava?
It'll taste great and be soft, but it'll lose some of its color. And then if you put like a fresh cut cubed apples or something, they'll be white and pretty.
So you want to add to them.
That's what I would
do. A mixture of. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you have the crunch.
I'm not sure we are done with lobster rolls. I think
Can you ever be?
How wed are we, all of us, how wed are we to the traditional? The simple lobster roll, either hot or cold.
Celery,
with
mayonnaise.
With the salt, celery, onions.
Lots of lemon.
Mm. See, I've always been a hot butter.
Yeah, I'm a hot butter
hot
guy.
Hot buttered roll.
I'm on Mark's side on this one. I can't do the mayonnaise cold one.
Yeah. I can do it. I love lobster.
I don't like it. I like the hot, I'm a hot butter guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my favorite.
With a little lemon squeezed on top.
Oh, yeah.
I want a lot of lemon squeezed.
Or maybe like some crispy shallots sprinkled over the top.
Now we're getting away from the traditional.
See, this is what's interesting.
Now I'm dressing it up.
I like to hear how people get creative with lobster rolls, too, because everyone knows how to do a classic.
Oh, yeah.
How do you, so now you're adding crispy shallots?
Oh, yeah.
On top of your
lobster
roll.
A little crunchy on top of that?
This is on the warm one.
This is on the hot buttered, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's
We'll call that the hot butter.
And you're crisping up the shallots in butter, I'm guessing?
Absolutely.
But you know, those crispy shallots would also be terrific on the cold lobster roll that I like.
I think they would.
Nice texture on there.
When it's cold, I consider it a lobster salad.
Yes.
When it's hot, I consider it a lobster roll.
That's the distinction for me.
Lobster salad is on like a bed of lettuce or something.
Or it could be in a roll. Yeah. It could be in a roll. Lobster salad sandwich.
I love the classic because it's so good. However, I like to fool around. So I like to do the cold lobster roll, you know, with the mayonnaise and the salt and the pepper. And sometimes I don't even put celery in. Mm-hmm. But I do, at the end, like to sprinkle on crumbled bacon on the top.
What's not good with
and
bacon?
And sometimes I like to put fresh corn kernels into the salad
mayonnaise. And I'll tell you what, you take some fresh corn off the cob and you put that in with the hot buttered lobster roll. You almost got yourself a little clam bake going on there.
What Robin was saying, without the bread, imagine taking just an iceberg lettuce leaf and making like a little burrito,
maybe
like an Asian sort of roll out of it.
Oh,
avocado sliced.
So it's the salad, it's healthy, no carbohydrates.
Yeah. A summer roll.
A summer roll.
Yeah. Okay. And that's gluten-free. Yeah.
Am I the only one that likes to not make the lobster roll?
You like to go to a place.
Yeah. What's the one at the end of the dock in Clinton? Yeah. Down like a little side street.
He's Italian or something?
It is by far just sitting there.
It's on Liberty Street.
Yeah, smelling the water. Yes, yes. And it's just this outside shack, right? It's not much.
Yeah. Oh.
But
he's got a little tent now.
Yeah.
When he grows things in his garden, you should hear him talk. You just want to weep. It's like a movie. So he is so particular about how he makes the lobster roll, how the butter must be cooked in the pan. He clarifies the butter. He said, oh, no, we do not just melt butter and put it. He said, that's not how it's done. He said, you must have the finest butter. when you put this on the roll. I mean, this is
and it
guy
is
here.
So good. It's and maybe it's not Seinfeld. Just the lobster roll. Maybe it's the place, too, right? Because you're sitting right on the water.
Plastic chairs.
Plastic chairs. And it's always busy. You're always waiting a couple minutes to get in there to get a table.
But you get to bring your own wine or beer or lemonade, whatever you make.
Yeah.
You can even bring sides if you want. He offers some sides, but you can bring your own. So that's a good thing to do.
Is anyone making sun tea? Does anyone ever make sun tea?
We used to have it as a kid. It used to be in a jar sitting on the front porch. I don't know. I don't think I see it that much anymore,
it's
right?
It's gone the way of sun in.
Yeah.
All right. So does anybody go out for this Italian place we're talking about in Clinton down by the dock? He also cooks sausage and peppers.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And we'll make you, because that's kind of a holiday.
Yep. For your non-seafood eaters.
I usually order that at some fair, you know, the sausage and peppers on that grill for 100 years. Yeah. Just fantastic.
The bread soaks it all up.
Sometimes it's so good.
A little provolone cheese on it.
You just have to go to the gym for two days after.
Summer, go walk on the beach.
The bread just absorbs the fat. Just go walk on the beach.
How about a batch of whole belly clams?
Perfect for this time of year. I'm a big clam fan. 4th of July.
I love with clam sauce. If they're nice enough, you just squeeze a fresh lemon on them and go at it.
Can I do something right now that you have raised this issue? I'd like us to have conversation with you as you're listening to this about where you think the best clams are. Listen, if you want to include the Cape, please do. You know, if there's someplace in New York City you want to include that, then North Fork or South Fork of Long Island, Massachusetts, wherever it might be. The best clams you have ever had, fried clams, we would like to know on Facebook. Mm. So here's our address, Faith Middleton Fuchsmus. And we'll share some of ours, too. I know in my family we have great debates on the Cape in the summer about which place we're going to go to.
Are you going to get a license? Did you already get a license?
Alex knows that I paid $300.
For a clam?
For one resident.
Even got one bucket of clams?
I got one bucket of clams. It was most expensive clams ever on Earth. But I felt very nautical.
I feel like we should go out as a group.
I think so. That's a really good idea.
We could do that. We could definitely do that.
Let's go clamming.
Let's go clamming. Yeah. Absolutely. We just got to find the right spot. I got a funny feeling someone would give us some guidance.
The right spot.
Well, Clinton. There's some good places in Clinton to go.
Oh, yeah.
In Noank.
For sure.
Yeah?
For the quahogs or whatever.
Yeah.
Those are good. Chewy, but they're good.
Mm. Stuffies. Make stuffed clams.
I love
stuffed clams. A little chorizo.
But you have to make them yourself.
Yeah.
The ones you buy
too much
in places.
Oh, and too much sodium. They're loaded with stuff.
How about Casino? Does anyone remember
Matt
that
loves
one?
Those.
Oh, little Sam's Casino.
And bacon on, one little piece of bacon on top, broiled.
Who doesn't love that?
I don't see it that much anymore.
Ford's makes
really?
Them. Yeah, Mac orders it every time.
Where's Ford's?
In Noank.
In Noank.
Yeah.
See, I got to find these places. Because
we'll go together. I haven't had
Clams Casino in a restaurant in years.
So old school.
It used to be every restaurant had them.
Delicious.
The bacon on top.
It is heaven on earth.
We did make them.
That goes with using our broiler.
Absolutely.
Remember in the winter we were using our broiler? That goes with it.
Tell you, my mom's rice and clams is still the best clam dish I've ever had.
I can never
recreate it like she can. It's rice and clam broth and
paella.
I think
right?
I've put the recipe up once before, but she can just, they make it in earthenware classically, you know, like stoneware you'd find in Spain or Portugal.
Will she make it for us?
I think mine's good, but hers is, it's incredible.
That'd be a good summer
thing.
Yeah. Okay. Honestly, Mom, are you listening?
We need to try that.
This is a
formal request. Alex's mom, we need to try that.
Mrs. Province, is a formal request. We would love for you to come in with that dish. I've been hearing about this for so long.
So good.
I can't wait. There's so many things. See, holiday weekend.
Summer.
It's so much fun. Okay. The water's warm. Fish are jumping.
Snappers are on their way.
Yeah.
You get the small ones whole. You get them already cleaned.
Yeah.
And then you just take a knife and slice down on the outside. Yeah. This is whole. And then I just take a little ginger and scallion and garlic and I put it in those slits.
Oh, like Asian.
And I throw it in a bowl with some lime juice and some cilantro and a little bit of oil. And you let it sit in there for a little bit. And then I throw them on the grill whole.
Oh,
my man. God. It's just
so these
heaven.
Are the snapper blues?
Yeah, the small ones, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
The
and just the little
ones.
Baby ones. And, oh, my God. They're heaven.
Oh,
and
then that sounds
pick,
amazing.
Then you just pick them. Use your hands.
You don't get even, them at the fish market.
Yeah,
you
get
don't
them
catch
at the
them.
No, I'm not a big fisherman, but yeah.
They're easy to catch.
Yeah. Then you should catch some
I'll
and bring them
I'll
to
bring
us.
Them in.
All yeah. Right. I'll cook them.
It's a deal.
So good.
All right. Well, this was
well,
really
well, we've got
fun.
The menu planned out for the summer, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
That's the thing. We say it's for 4th of July, but really it can be for any weekend.
All summer
All
long.
The time. Exactly. All right. We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes. Our slogan, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. Hey, don't want the party to end? Well, neither do we. Talk with us anytime online at foodschmooze.org.